stand on this Insight Wednesday, October the 21st in the year of our Lord, 2015. I'm Tom Baker, and we're going to be talking about the uncommonsensicalness of Christian theology, and specifically as understood by Lutheran theology. Yesterday, Mark Smith said there wasn't such a word, but I looked it up, and it's commonsensical is definitely a word, and the negative to it is uncommonsensical. So, there is such a word, and what do we mean by it? Well, you take common sense and you reverse it. For example, I've said 100 times, you want to know how God thinks. Think commonsensically, then reverse it, and you'll be close. I'll give you a couple of examples from the Bible. You have a Goliath of a man to defeat. Who are you going to send out to defeat him? Well, obviously, you'd want to get somebody who is as big as he is, or near as big, because he was a giant, and then you put armor on him and have him go out to fight. Well, who does God choose? He chooses a lad, and he has a sling. By the way, I used to say slingshot, and Pastor Larry Burdorf corrected me on that they didn't have slingshots in those days. Slingshot would be, you know, it's kind of a stick with a Y at the top, and you put the rubber band around the Y part and put a stone in it and shoot it. No, they used a sling, and I've actually seen that in Arab countries. These young boys, they put a stone in a piece of cloth or leather or whatever, and they begin to whip it around. And when they let go of it, they can hit a can on a fence that's quite a distance from them. That's how accurate they are with that sling. So that doesn't seem to make any sense to go after a giant who has a big sword and all kinds of shields, but it sure did make sense because Goliath was defeated. Now, give me another example. God brings his son into the world. Who is he going to go tell? He goes and tells shepherds. Shepherds are considered as unclean because of their knowledge and their practice of sacrificing sheep. They were not even allowed into the temple proper without a lot of ceremonial washing that they had to do. They had to follow rituals. Unclean. Now, you would think commonsensically, God would report to the religious leaders of the day. But who else did he report to besides shepherds? We three kings of Orient are. You can understand why I'm not in the choir. Yes, the three wise men. Guess what? They were Gentiles. Now, isn't that odd that God wouldn't use common sense in reporting to the religious leaders of his day? Why not? Well, remember when the wise men came to Herod and he was talking to the religious leaders of his day? They said, well, Bethlehem appears to be where the Messiah is going to be born. And even with that knowledge, Herod used it to try to kill the Messiah, killing all the little babies at that time. Probably one of the reasons God did not inform the religious leaders of Judaism because of their wrong view. They had commonsensical understanding of religion. They kind of believed in the karma. You do something right, you get rewarded by God. You do something wrong, you get punished. Yes. I'll give you one more example. Jesus has risen from the dead. The tomb is empty. Who are the first witnesses? You ready for this one? Women. Yes. They go to the tomb to put on the proper anointment of Jesus' body and discover the tomb empty. And the angel is looking at them and saying, you are seeking Jesus of Nazareth, who is crucified. He is risen. Now, they run back to the disciples and talk about Jesus having risen from the dead. But you see, women were not just second-class citizens. They were really down low on the totem pole of status. They also were not allowed into the temple proper. In fact, there's a rabbi's prayer that thanks God he wasn't born a woman. And the reason he says that is because not being able to enter into the proper portions of the temple, they had their own court, they were unable to fulfill a number of the ceremonial laws. And in Judaism, remember that parable in Luke 18 where the Pharisee says he's not only better than the tax collector, but that's because he enumerates ceremonial laws that he's following, like fasting and tithing and so forth. Judaism was a lot like Mormonism, where one definitely comes to an understanding that you are right with God because of, that's right, following the ceremonial laws. And then he also said, you know, I don't do the sins either. But he forgot about sinning by thought and by word. He only thought sinning by deed was critical. No. Poor man. So, I could spend the whole program going through the ridiculous notions that Christianity teaches. And, of course, the most ridiculous and uncommonsensical is that you are partly responsible for crucifying Jesus, and he turns around and forgives you. That just doesn't make sense. And there's a lot of people who deny that God killed his own son for your sakes. So, tomorrow we're going to talk more about commonsensical religion. Oprah Winfrey has got a new set of programs that she's putting out, and with the help of Wes Reimnitz, we'll look at what she has to say. But it's commonsensical. Right now, we want to stick with the uncommonsensical sense of Christianity, and particularly Lutheranism. One of the points that I make, I'm going to be putting out a webinar. I call it Baker's Sermon Dozen, which means 13 points on how to do a sermon, and many of them will be most helpful in also how to teach Bible study. And these points are critical. One of them is to show the uncommonsensicalness of the Christian faith with updated, I don't call them parables, I call them analogies, but it's the same thing. And where do I get these from? Well, I get them primarily from my experience. So I'm going to give you one right now. How a lot of things seem to be commonsensical, but upon closer analysis, it really goes against common sense. As I indicated yesterday, when I went to Preston, Kansas at St. Paul Lutheran Church to do sermons, Bible study, seminar, and going out to Pizza Hut, I drove over 1,000 miles. The speed limit on Highway 35 in Kansas was 75 miles an hour. Which kind of surprised me. The only time I've ever seen that is in Oklahoma, and that was on a toll road. But from, what was it, Kansas City, a good number of miles, it was free. Then all of a sudden, I see a sign. In two more places, you got to pay a toll. Well, if at all possible, I don't pay tolls. I learned that in Chicago. You get on those Chicago toll roads, especially during driving time, and they're not any faster, and you got to pay money, and you often get stuck in traffic on the toll road. Now, that doesn't happen in Oklahoma so much because there's simply not that many people along the state road of the toll road, but be as it may, I got off immediately. Took the next exit and went to a gas station. And I wasn't sure if they'd even have gas stations on the toll road, so I filled up sufficiently to get where I was going. And I walked into the gas station and asked the lady behind the counter, is it true there's a toll road up here? And she said, yes. I said, how much is it to get through it? And it was $2.45. Now, no, I'm sorry. It was $4.50. $4.50. I found out later from a truck driver that they have to pay $18. You know, those 19-wheelers or 18-wheel trucks. Yeah, not 19. They don't have one in the middle of the truck. Well, I'm not going to pay that. So I said, what other way can you go? And they showed me a Highway 50. The trouble is, it goes north a little bit, doesn't stay even with Highway 35, and then comes back down south. So I said, well, that's what I'm going to take. Well, standing beside me, waiting to pay something, appeared to be a college student. And she said, well, from a geometric point of view, if you go out of your way that far north and then come back down south to get past the 35, you're probably going to spend the same amount in gas as if you stayed on 35 and paid the toll road. And I looked at her and I said, you're teaching me geometry? And I said to her, but I don't think she understood it, is that, no, actually, by not taking the toll road, I'm going to save money. And I tried to explain a little bit to her, but she didn't understand because she was just looking at the angles. Rather than going straight, I was going to go north a while and then down. Actually, it was about a half hour out of my way. Why did I insist on not taking the toll road? What was my reasoning? Well, I drive a car that gets at 55 miles to the gallon. I'm sorry, 55 miles per hour. I get 32 miles per gallon. If I go up to 75 miles an hour, it drops down to almost 24. It's a difference of 8 miles to the gallon. So I said to her that actually I'm going to save money by not taking the toll road. Part of the problem about being on a 75-mile-an-hour expressway is that if you do go 55, cars are coming up on you so fast they're going to smash into the back. So you almost have to go 60 or 65 just to be safe. And that, of course, really reduced my miles per gallon. See, time isn't important for me. I knew it was about a 9-10 hour trip, but I left 14 hours to do it in. And I didn't have anything to do when I got there except sleep, which I ended up doing at a Walmart. But I didn't have a time problem. And so what I discovered is this Highway 50, which was a wonderful. It was a lot of times four lanes, and it had good shoulders and good lights. I mean, the lines were luminescent, so you could see them real well. I think I passed two cars going the other way because this was at 1:30 in the morning till about 3:30 in the morning. So nobody was on the road. Not only was I able to go, and I went about 52 miles an hour, because a lot of it was just 55 miles an hour, so that was safe. Not only did I save about 8 miles to the gallon, but I didn't have to pay that $4.50 toll. I actually made money by driving a half hour longer. See, that doesn't make any sense, because when you put it up on a piece of paper, going north and then back down south again, it just seems like it's going to cost more money, but it didn't. I actually saved money, and the only thing I lost was time. But what do I do when I'm driving? I either have CDs that I'm looking to. For example, I have a lot of C.S. Lewis's books on audio tape. And when I went up to Saskatchewan, which was 23 hours one way, in driving. I did hear all the audio books on C.S. Lewis, and then I was taking notes in the car and this sort of thing. So it was just really a wonderful ride. Well, what I did in Kansas, I was quite amazed. I have a scanning radio, and how many religious stations were on, even at that time in the morning. And I learned a couple of things. In fact, I probably got 3 or 4 programs out of it. For example, one of the points I make in doing a sermon is that if it doesn't talk about Jesus and salvation and the cross and the resurrection, it's not a sermon. It's really a lecture. So I began at the beginning of a program where this pastor said, I'm going to start preaching today, but I may do it next week and maybe even a third week. And then he talked about what he was going to talk about. And what it was he was going to tell us all about the apostles, their lives, what they had done. And for the first sermon, he just dwelt on Peter, talking about his hoof in the mouth kinds of mistakes, and then how God had used him afterwards. It was a wonderful history story on Peter, but there was no sermon involved. It was just a lecture. There was no long gospel. Remember, what a sermon does is not just give a lecture like a Bible class can do, but the sermon puts you to death with the law and raises you up with the gospel. In other words, a proper sermon applies the law, and then what does it do? It bestows the gospel. You can't apply the law because the gospel, because the gospel is a gift. And so you just bestow it. You just say it. And so I listened to this half-hour program, and all the guy was talking about was Peter. It was nothing about sin. I can't even remember the word Jesus being used. And certainly there wasn't anything about the cross and the resurrection. And he called that a sermon. And he was going to do it for 3 weeks. Ugh. So many of the programs had this kind of nonsense in it. Most of the other programs dwelt with looking to the Bible for principles of life. Well, what they mean by that is this is how you are to act. Now, see, that sounds commonsensical. And we're going to talk more about that tomorrow. What I'm doing is Bible studies on the parables. And the wrong view is always the commonsensical view. The right view is a long gospel view. And as we go through each parable, and I'm doing it on Tuesday morning at 11 a.m. at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Olivet, 9733 Olive Boulevard. And then also on Thursday night, the same kind of Bible class at Trinity in Orchard Farm at 7 p.m. So we're really enjoying ourselves and just really having a lot of fun going through what seems to be pretty obvious parables, but upon further reflection, they're really quite uncommonsensical. I'll just give you one example. The parable of the lost sheep has a shepherd going out, finding the sheep, putting it on his shoulders, and carrying it home. I can't tell you how many sermons I've heard where the people in the pews are now encouraged to be like that shepherd and find the lost sheep and help bring them home. If this is a commonsensical understanding of that parable, let me give you the uncommonsensical. The fact of the matter is parables are never about you as the main character. And in the parable of the lost sheep, who is the main character? It's not the sheep. Even though the title is The Lost Sheep, I've renamed all the parables. In fact, you can go to longgospel101.com and get a DVD under products of renaming the parables, because they're all named after the wrong person or the wrong character. It's not the lost sheep. It's about a shepherd who puts a sheep on his shoulders in the wilderness and carries him home that way. And so my title for that is The Suffering Shepherd. And it's not about us. This is not an example that we are to follow. It's not talking about sanctification. That is our response to having been saved. The parable of the lost sheep is about justification and how you were saved. And the shepherd isn't you, it's Jesus. Jesus, he even says, I am the good shepherd who lays down my life for the sheep. And he was suffering. In fact, it says, you know, with joy, he put that sheep on his shoulders and carried home. And that same word joy is found in Hebrews. For the joy that was set before him, he went the way of the cross. So, what's the point I'm trying to make during this broadcast? Is when a sermon is preached, there's two ways to understand every passage, the wrong way and the right way. And the wrong way is the commonsensical way, which the old Adam loves to look at. For example, in The Lost Sheep, the old Adam says, oh, look it, I have this responsibility to go and find lost sheep. Now, is that correct that we also are to speak to lost sheep? Well, yes, but that's not the Bible passage you would use to show how you do it. You're not the shepherd. Jesus is the shepherd who carries your sins to the cross. What passage would I use to show how Christians look for lost sheep and speak to them? I'd use Matthew 28, where Jesus says, you got to go out and you make disciples. But how? Not by putting their sins on your shoulders and you carrying them to your cross. No, by baptism and teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I've commanded them. And in a regular church, that is the normal way we baptize infants. And then when they get to the age where they can begin to understand the theology of the Christian church, we put them through confirmation. And when they have understood that, then they're ready to take the Lord's Supper. And so that's how they become communicant members of the church, even though prior to that they were baptized members of the church. Again, it just doesn't make sense at all. In fact, I just read an article where somebody was saying, you really think that, for example, eating a piece of bread and a sip of wine makes any difference in salvation? In fact, doesn't Jesus say, do this in remembrance of me? And I guarantee you the commonsensical view of remembrance is we do this to remember what Jesus has done for us. It's a memory thing. No, it's not. It's an action thing. When I remember my wife's birthday, it doesn't mean that I have it in my mind. No, I get a present for her. Maybe the latest snow shovel or lawnmower or whatever is needed. Remembrance. In fact, what is the Lord's Supper? What night was it inaugurated? On the night of the Passover. Now, are you going to tell me that when they put the blood over the doorway, nothing happened? That there was just a remembrance that God was somehow going to redeem his people? No. The Passover ended up with God doing something. Namely, God, probably the angel of death, Jesus himself, passed over those houses with the blood on the lintel in the doorway. Why? Because God had made a promise. So you see, the Passover wasn't about Israel doing something to save themselves. No, putting the blood on the doorway, had God not made his promise, wouldn't it have saved anyone? But because he attached a promise to it, as he does with baptism and the Lord's Supper, then God is definitely at work in doing and fulfilling what he has promised. Namely, you receive not only in the Lord's Supper the body and blood of Jesus Christ, but you also receive all the benefits of that body given for you and that blood shed for you. Wow, what a difference. So, again and again, especially on Mondays here, when we go over the Bible lessons for the following, say, Pentecost Sunday or Reformation, we talk in uncommonsensical ways. When I am preaching in the afternoon this weekend in Lincoln, Illinois, for their Reformation Festival, a number of churches are going to be there, my sermon is going to be quite uncommonsensical. I'm going to start off with a commonsensical question, as I always do, which most people will not answer correctly. And then I'll move into the sermon. Going to do something this Reformation I've never done in preaching, and I'm looking forward to it. Still preparing the sermon for the past 3 weeks. If you want to get a hold of me in preparation for tomorrow, when Wes Reimnitz will be here, and we'll talk about commonsensical religion, lawandgospel@lawandgospel101.com. I'm Tom Baker. Till tomorrow, God bless.
Listen to Law and Gospel each weekday at this time on Worldwide KFUO. For a contribution to the program, make your check payable to Law and Gospel and mail it to Pastor Tom Baker, Post Office Box 28910, St. Louis, Missouri 63132. You can call toll-free at 1-877-267-1962 or email lawandgospel@lawandgospel101.com.